This is Winging It Podcast, the podcast for people who don't have their shit together.
The motherfucking originator. In case it's right on.
Worldwide originator and I'm packing a four. Motherfucker going home no more. Not a thug, but I put you in a rug with a couple of slugs. Turn the cabbage to coleslaw with the white chalk closed off. Friends turn enemies, stolen identity, can't get rid of me. I watch the cocaine bubble up and kilo price double up. You got a problem with a Marcy nigga, lock a load or knock a luck. What you know about 1976? A young nigga getting money playing shuffle luck. I'm the prototype, first one, king of the triplet. When I first did it, Twista wasn't even in the business. New big when he wasn't even in the business. Put the little nigga Jay-Z in the business. Got a motherfucking freeway till he shitless. My style's hostile.
We're back with the Winging It Podcast. I am Rashad Howard here with
Athena Cross
and
Jazz O,
the originator. Y'all don't even know, man. This is a big moment for me, just because I'm just going to take this moment for myself, even though we do have someone else here from Brooklyn who's probably going to go in on it. But I was 10, 11, maybe 12, somewhere in there. I think it was like 1990. I don't remember the exact year, but I remember having a boombox, putting it up against the TV, because Yo MTV Raps would do the countdown and Originators was number one. And it's funny because like the first week it was number one, I remember being like, who, like Originators, like what is that? And then I played that tape back over and over and over, just trying to like catch up with the lyrics. Wow. And it's like, you know, never in my wildest dreams as a kid did I feel like I was ever going to be in the presence of the great Jazz O. Oh, so I appreciate it, bro.
Checks in the mail, man.
Yeah, my man. Did I do good?
did great, man. So it's a pleasure to be on the podcast and you know, to talk. You know, yeah, we didn't talk about like can I speak freely?
You can talk as freely as you want.
That is the whole entire purpose behind the show.
Oh, yeah, nah, because, you know, I'm one of those type, you know, I don't know who gets offended at, you know, the N-word and all that other stuff, but I know what those words come from or where they come from. Word. So I speak on them under a whole different context. So let's go.
So let's talk about the origins of the Winging It Podcast. We call it the podcast for people who don't have their shit together. And the entire concept is that we want everyone to be entirely 100% open, honest, authentic, just coming to the table with whatever they got.
I guess I'll go first.
Look at that. Okay.
All right. So my name is Athena Cross. I'm really happy to be back here in Atlanta. I love that we take our show on the road and we get to be in different places and, you know, be wherever people are. So that's really important to me. But what I'm really happy about is hearing your story, because I think it is a really great journey. And I think that there will be many people who will be, who will learn from it. And I too am coming to this with my heart open and a willingness to learn about your version of Brooklyn, because I got my own. So right, with that, my ego is checked.
I'll go next. My name is Rashad Howard. This is a big moment for me personally. So I'm just excited to be in the room, and I'm going to check my need to sort of perform and, like, you know, ask all the best questions and figure out how to, like, get deep in anything and really just let this flow. Like it's a cipher. So with that, my ego is checked.
My turn?
Yeah, sir. It's you.
You know, I'm Jazz O. It's a daily function to douse the egomaniacism that comes with my life. And I'm over myself, you know. So when I say myself, I mean like the person that is perceived as opposed to the person I am. And on that, my ego's checked.
That's dope.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Person that is perceived versus the person that I am. With that, we'll take our first break and we'll come back after a moment with Winging It the Podcast.
Have none of that, all right? Originators is here. With us, more of the kick a little something. You heard us on tune later, right? Yeah, but we're on to do the kick, kick, kick.
it. My rhyming and singing techniques are portable, living in luxury and it's affordable. No other weather is better than me, the J, the A, the Z. The cream of the crop on the top of the top. The suckers are trying to stop, the bigger, the bigger, the bigger, the boss off the hip hop. They never come in, they never come here, no, no, not this year. They go on the fear, I'm ready to say, I'm a jerk, tears. Operator, pushing the data. I'm talking about info, attack, it just is stumbling and bubbling off the intro. So take it a step at a time, this dope rhyme. Be making a note that is profound by your skill, mind. This is the wonderful biters. Stealers and robbers and sucker insiders. Call it a night before you roam. Don't try to sit home. This not that I'm using, I'm here to abuse. The garbage that I can refuse. Divvy it up, cause I'm here to collect my dues from all of you. All
right, we're back with the Winging It podcast here with Jazzo, the originator. I'm just gonna start off with the start. Jazz, can you tell the world what illustrious city and borough that you're from and tell us about you?
Name is Jazzo. Born and raised in Brooklyn.
BK.
Blanca. That's right. Blanca.
You know. You know what I'm saying? Born and raised Marcy Projects.
Word.
You know, edge the bordering Bed-Stuy in Williamsburg. Rough place to grow up. I learned everything I know and most everything I apply to my everyday life today from being a child in that place. That's me. You know, it's hard for me to go into some of that stuff because I'm over the other stuff.
Right.
You know, but
right.
But Brooklyn was just a. Hindsight. You realize how beautiful a place it is, even with all the things going on today with, the making it a major tourist attraction. Mm-hmm. And
gentrification.
Definitely, competing with Manhattan. Mm-hmm. and stuff like that as far as, the place to go when you come to Brooklyn. And, I still, regardless of the scenery, when I go there, what I feel is totally different. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel home regardless, even though you see the bikes that you can mm-hmm. use to yeah. set up, like, what is that?
Yeah.
If they had that, they couldn't have that when
back in the day.
When I was growing up, like, all of those bikes would be stolen.
Exactly.
Someone could have figured out how
they'd
to
be like, nigga, you gotta catch me, cause I'm gonna go get some spray paint. And
this make is no, it mine,
right?
Make
it's it no mine. Longer Citibank, Citibank bike. It's over with. So
it's definitely a different place.
Yeah, and though we tend to look at it a certain way, it is an improvement mm-hmm. because unfortunately, a lot of people who live there, they shouldn't be living the way they live. Regardless of your, your financial position, you shouldn't be living a certain way. You should have a certain, and we all have codes, even though some seem totally lawless, but we all have codes that we, mm-hmm. That we live by.
Yeah.
And, your environment shouldn't predict your code of ethics.
Talk about that.
Yeah.
Talk about the code of the Brooklyn you grew up in. As it related to how it like impacted who you became, and then how it went from your born name to Jazzo.
For one, I'll keep it as simple as possible. Is that it's just things like, just because you poor, that don't mean you have to steal. Just because you angry, that don't mean you have to take it out on somebody. I grew up in an environment where, you got a problem with somebody, you shoot the fair one. You know what I'm saying? We used to do this funny ass shit called, the mediator stand between two people who might or may not want to fight each other, and they go, best man hit. So they hit the mediator, and the mediator hit the other person that may want to fight, and then like, best man hit to the opposite, and then they hit, and it's like, what y'all want to do? It's nothing like that now. Like,
yeah. Nah.
Mm-hmm. It's just no code of ethics. And we attributed it to just motherfuckers becoming cowardly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things that, we had parents that, they didn't advocate violence, but at the same time, like, look, you don't let nobody put their hands on you.
That's right.
You know, so if it comes to that, you gotta, you know, you gotta get down. So, but the whole thing is different. I mean, people, and I'm just using this, the whole violence thing, or, you know, that type of stuff as an example. You know, people don't fight the same anymore. People don't.
They don't fight mm-hmm. anymore.
They don't right.
Fight. they don't fight anymore.
They don't love anymore. Yeah, because it's like, you know, why? And that's the ego thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, why potentially get my ass beat out here when I could shoot this person, or stab this person, mm-hmm. or threaten somebody that, you know, can't defend themselves, that is beloved by that person that mm-hmm. you're trying to harm.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. it's just a lot. You know, one, you know, I grew up in an environment where when that code was being violated, there were others, and there was enough people, you know, the majority was like, nah, they ain't fair. Nah, they gonna shoot the fair one, mm-hmm. or, you know, such and such stole something from what? Like, he lives in the building right across from, like, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know? So just things like that. And I'm not saying that it doesn't exist anymore. I'm just saying that, I saw that type of behavior in the community and the neighborhood deteriorate.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
what do you think is some of the contributors to that? What made it change so much?
We can all blame it on the media and things like that. The media has become more liberal as mm-hmm. far as, you know, the content.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think it's the breakdown of the functional household, because it doesn't matter what's on television or on the radio. That radio has to be turned on in my house. That television has to be turned on in my house. So it was the deterioration of values by the parents,
mm-hmm.
you know, because everybody wants to blame all outside sources, but it's your house. So you control that, or at least give your children a perspective of these things. It's like, yeah, they do this now. Okay, now they curse more on television. Okay, they show more, you know, as far as romance and things like that, you know, but this is the perspective that is being, you know, this is the perspective that I'm going to give you. So it was really up to the parents. And then something that my mother, she told me a story about a mother and her daughter. And she heard the story, like, she, you know, the daughter, you know, came into adulthood, and, you know, it turned out that the mother and the daughter frequented similar clubs and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So she said that, you know, the mother was basically, you know, she was cornered, you know, like some teenager, you know, by some dude, yeah. you know, like he kicking it to her and everything like that. And she was like, that's one thing that she never would allow for us to see her as anybody else besides our mother, you know. And that's one of the main things that has changed over the years. It's like, just because you come of age, that don't mean, you know, like with my sons, just because you come of age, that don't mean you my homie.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I'm still your father.
Yeah.
That's right.
You know, and I may talk to you based on the level you are intellectually,
mm-hmm.
you know, which has little to do with age sometimes. You know, I'm still your father. And she was saying that, how could that mother, you know, once they get to the household, regulate anything with her, because
she's in the club with her daughter.
Right. The retaliation is like,
I'm just you out. Yeah.
Right. You just out. Like
doing
me.
The same thing.
Just like me. You ain't doing nothing slick. You know.
I feel something that's that's deep inside of both of the things that you talked about. That's the changing of Brooklyn, the changing of the code, the lack of a code today, as well as the conversation you just talked about. And it says to me that the value that you hold dear is this concept of respect.
Mm-hmm.
Respect, yes, and family love. Mm-hmm. You know, that's and I think it's missing. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, when I go back to Brooklyn, like, you know, and I don't mean to, I'm not trying to besmirch the good name of Brownsville, but Brownsville is a rough place. I mean,
yes.
Brownsville has always been a rough place. And I mean, I'm saying it growing up in Bed-Stuy, I'm like, yeah, Brownsville was a different animal, right. You know, and everybody from Brooklyn can knows concur.
That. Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Heights, so
yeah. It. Yeah. So it's just difficult to look at. I watched. It's almost heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It's almost heartbreaking because you grow up having these values and these same values become foreign, you know, after a while. And like I said, it's up to the parents. And I've always said that. It's up to the parents to have a certain stand on things and become an example. I'm gonna put my own family out there, like not out there, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I have five children, and two of them, you know, born and raised, you know, in Atlanta. And so, you know, there were times, you know, I was back and forth, you know, from New York to Atlanta, and. You know, and this happens. So I could have been general about this, but, you know, so what?
Yeah, man.
You know, so it would be, you know, maybe 9:30, 10 at night. And then, you know, they were young children. So they were still up at some time. And they would be watching these, you know, programs and movies that, you know, children shouldn't be looking at. And so, you know, I'll be like, why y'all watching that? Kids are still up. And they're like, they're not paying any attention to that. And I'm like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. Cause that's the input is getting in their brains.
Yeah. Right. And they are watching. And that's why they keep running back and forth.
Yeah.
Right. You know, they'll run back and forth.
They know they're not supposed to be, but they're
right.
Doing it
anyway. And they stop and they look, mm-hmm. you know, and there's, you know, a love scene or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's not the worst thing in the world or what have you, but it's like, it's not like you're explaining it afterwards.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, you're not explaining why mm-hmm. this is going on the screen. Mm-hmm.
You're not giving it context for their lives.
Exactly.
Yes. And that's a problem.
Right. It's making it just a thing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So anywhere else they see it or anything that may determine that type of behavior in the near future of their lives is just like, oh, it's just a thing.
But tell us a little bit about how this sort of philosophy represents itself in your music, or, you know, when you even started to today, like, you know, were you in a different place before and then end up?
You know, sometimes creativity, it doesn't leave much room for, you know, moralistic views. You know, you're at that crossroad where you're like, okay, am I going to entertain people? Am I going to, you know, express myself, or am I going to just, you know, be this moral standard or whatever? And I end up doing all of it, you know, and I just, I'm good with myself, the way I feel about myself and things, that I don't really have to curtail much, you know, and I don't have to forgive for anything that I say or do, but I do keep it within, you know, a lot of stuff people say, you know, like, in, you know, creative wise, you know, like, you know, I hang your grandmother out the window, all that type of, you know, and everybody, you know, everybody's a shooter and all this stuff. It's like, you're not, like, stop playing. But I don't think it's the best thing to even, you know, express that all the time. Most of my music, when I'm talking about gunplay or whatever, it's not on the offensive. So I guess that would mm-hmm. count as having some, you know, form of my inner feelings being expressed in any context or, you know, subject matter in my music.
So I'm going to ask this because we're starting to talk a little bit about your music. How do we get to, how did Jazz-O become Jazz-O?
Yeah.
Well, long, long time ago. Man, a long time ago. My first, I'm going to try to keep it as quick as possible. My first MC name was Johnny B. But before that, like, my mother used to always correct us in our grammar. Like, of course, now they got ain't in the dictionary, but
right
before ain't was in the dictionary, she was like, I don't know why you using that.
Ain't no ain't.
Right. Right. And she's, you know, she used to always throw like new words at me. You know, like if I'm being silly, she would say, oh, you being so facetious. I was like, huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm not a teenager. I'm like 6-7 years old.
Wow.
So I'm like, okay, that's good, but that enhanced what I practice today. But it's not a short story, obviously.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good story though. You're about to tell us how your mom made you a rapper. I'm feeling this.
Yeah, for the most part.
I'm feeling it. Keep going with this, bro.
Because it made me. I was always compelled to express myself poetically, and when I got to to elementary school and higher up in the grades in elementary school, it just turned out that my homeroom teacher, you know, she was, her main thing was English. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the whole thing, you know, reading Catcher in the Rye and mm-hmm. all of those, you know, standards. And
wait a second, you were in Brooklyn where they had high dropout rates.
In the 90s,
especially
yeah.
back in the 80s.
Oh, 90s.
Yeah. I mean, oh, you talking about me in school at that time, it was the 70s.
Yeah. And you talk about Catcher in the Rye and facetious.
Hey. And
this is deep though, because like we're sort of taught that nothing good comes out of those environments.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
no.
That there's no education, and that there's no one that, like the people there don't have any exposure or access to anything that we could call knowledge.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm segueing a little bit because the music that you came out with was, especially in the beginning, mm-hmm. the music you came out with was full of light.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Full of knowledge.
Appreciate
you know?
It.
Yeah.
And so it's good to hear that this is something that was created. It was something that was taught. Attention. It was trained.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say I was very fortunate in having the people around that recognize certain things, because I was bestowed certain things just because of how people felt about me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would give me instruments. They, you know, even in kindergarten, you know, they'd be like, you know, we do the sing along song stuff. They would give me like the percussion stuff, because mm-hmm. I always did that. Like, I always had different ways of tapping on the table mm-hmm. and making beats. And you know, you hear Jay-Z talk about it, how we used to beat on the table and go back and forth with the rhymes and stuff. So for the most part, like, you know, my mother, on the level of grammar and, you know, just extending my vocabulary, I was just always compelled to excel in English aspect of school. And one day, you know, they used to always tap the, you know, the light post, you know, and bring the music out, you know, on the projects. And one day, I guess I was about 13, maybe, one of my neighbors was like, yo, they got the music out, this, that, and the other. It's like, why don't you write a rhyme? I guess they were too coward to do it themselves. Like, yeah, you do it, you know. It was so weird that I was actually compelled to, I don't know why, but I was compelled to write a rhyme. I, you know, and I wrote what I know now is like an 8-bar rhyme. Mm-hmm. And he was like, man, he was like, you should say that outside. I was like, shh. So,
then, you remember it? See, I know you do.
I know you do.
You're not trying to give it, but I know you remember it, bro.
You remember.
I think it's like
MC Johnny B, I rock the house in Marcy, I am the greatest of all time. I make death rhyme, so I'm in my prime. I'm the baddest MC in the human race. Everywhere I go, I rock the place. So step in the door and give your donation to hear the best sound in something creation.
Oh, that's really dope. My man.
Man,
them still good bars, bro.
I had to go in the file. I had to dust that file off.
Money. You know what I'm saying? Money ain't everything. It's a lot, though. You know, we out here doing what we do. Yes. Kings County, motherfuckers. Marcy's greatest. Jazzo. Dave Tovin. It's what it is. Let's go.
Don't get next to me. I'm electricity. Sick. Running a high fever, I'm the driver, I ain't tripping, see, sick, running a high fever, enough to bring smoke out your chimney, sick, running a high fever, sick, running a high fever, sick, running a high fever,
I'm sick. Running a high fever, blowing, getting my degrees up, breaking bread with my cheetahs and my Labrador retrievers, 12 rooms, 20 acres for my leisure, still stash a 32 that'll freeze ya, still with the gleams fresh out the freezer, gifted like A-Day Christmas, so at ease you Ebenezers, sick. Running a high fever, most of my proteges playing amnesia. Fuck a nigga that supports ya, feed ya. I'd extort your chump asses if I needed.
So you know, and before we jump into the break, I just wanna tap into that, because you just went into your head. I saw you look up to the right. You accessed the brain and came up with it. Have you always done like a lot of writing, or was that something that you can just
freestyle?
You can pretty much come off the dome and keep it.
I do both. Like nowadays, like as far as studio work, it depends on how I feel, and it depends like if I'm doing a verse for somebody, and I'm like, okay, it's one verse, and I don't really feel like, you know, going in my phone or, you know, and scribing it, and I'll just do it in my head by way of repetition. You know, I got one line, I got two lines, keep saying that and come up with the third, fourth, and just knock it out like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's funny that I have it, and then as soon as I go in the booth, I go blank. Mm-hmm. So I gotta start all over again, but it's a lot less time because it's already there. I don't know, it's the weirdest thing, but it's nothing.
Yeah, word. All right, so with that, we're gonna take our first break. We're coming back in a moment with Jazzo.
I'm the best at, you know, I know a bit of this. Me, I'm a being vintage. I came into the business with this. The originator, none greater. Jazzo, finish the better learn Jazzo, relax that. Ever heard of me? Worldwide originator, say word to me. The population out of certain league. I burn a rapper like a third degree. See me sound so bright, gleaming on my light. Running, ruling with rigor and vigor. Nobody bigger than me. Get jigger. You figure you fly by night, stop chirping. Be heavyweights, light work to me. For the time and it's rapping business, ain't nobody hurting me. What? Cut the dummy like surgery. Roll the rims out of BM, skin it BMs on the road when you had to be in bed in the PM. Either info, Jazz or the CNN. Forever touching more work is beginning, you in it. Like your styles, no style, my style's high style. Come on, back at Chili Down and take the gun home. The originator.
Let me put any other interviewers that may be listening or that will be listening on notice that I've been treated royally. And
my man,
you know, I'm sought to have a writer for interviews.
That's
yo,
right.
hey, come tell the world what Winging It does for you, man.
You need the writer. You That's need right. to be like, I need my chai latte with an extra shot.
That's right. Winging It has messed it up for all of y'all.
That's dope. Hey, I'm good with it. We set the new standard. That's what we do here.
It is.
So, Jazz, so, tell us how you became Jazzo.
Yes, right.
Okay, so after that rhyme, and you know, my neighbor, you know, he was singing my praises and this, that, and the other. You know, I started.
You came out the gate, the God. Like, you came out the gate, the first eight bars.
With fans.
They're just like, you got fans now. You're getting big up. Like, ASAP.
Yeah. So,
oh, man.
So, what happened was nobody had ever heard that rhyme besides him. And I had another neighbor, you know, a close friend of mine, named Ron, and Ron and I, you know, we used to do a lot of stuff, get money besides having a job. You know, but we ain't go crazy with it. We were still very young.
I get it.
Yeah, we were entrepreneurs.
Young hustlers.
But I got to tell you about this this game. I don't know if y'all familiar with. It's called Chuck-a-Luck.
Tell me about Chuck-a-Luck.
Okay, Chuck-a-Luck. You got a board, or a board could be anything. You could have a piece of cardboard, you know, preferably like rectangular, and you have six squares. You write 1, 2, 3. You know, respectively, 4, 5, and 6. And then some people play with 4 dice. You get a cup that you can't see through. And people put their money on the number. And it's sort of like a roulette without a roulette. And so the numbers that come up on the dice, whoever has that money on that number gets paid.
Okay.
So that was our thing. We started playing Chuck-a-Luck, getting a lot of money doing that. You know, what we saw as a lot of money as, you know, kids. So anyway, he had an uncle named Mango who lived in Red Hook. Had to dust that off too. Dust that follow. So we used to go out there, you know, on the weekends. You know, sometime he played music in the apartment. Sometimes, you know, he had little house parties going on and wanted us to come through. So I'm definitely a bad influence because we was too damn young to be going to some grown people parties. Let alone Red Hook. So Ron threw me out there to the wolves. He was like, Johnny Rhymes. I was like, oh, man, don't do this. He was like, you got some rhymes, don't you? I was like, oh, shit. And he was like, don't worry. He was like, you back here because, you know how you do the house parties. The setup was in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? An extension cord, all that shit to the speakers and everything else. So nobody could see who I was anyway. And so they were like, if you fuck up, nobody knows it's you.
Right.
Anyway, so right. I'm like, that's true. So I was like, but I wasn't too worried about messing up. I was more concerned.
How old
like,
were you about then?
Oh, man. 13 or 14.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So I kicked all the rhymes I had. I had about 4 or 5 at that time. And buffer them with a bunch of yes, y'all, but to the beat, y'all. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. The crowd hype. Yeah.
Right. And all the throw your hands in the air. But after like one rhyme, you know, you hear a bunch of geezers and go, yeah, woo, go, yeah. So, then you know what happened.
Right?
You know what I'm saying? I was like, yeah, I got a couple more rhymes in. You know, I was like, shit, they drunk and everything else. They ain't going to remember that I said this other rhyme. This is the first one I said. So, you know, I'm going to say this one more time and shit. Keep it going.
This is like a hook, bro.
You know what I'm saying?
This is like a hook.
And it was like, yeah, you did good. And I was like, help me get my head out this room.
Okay, so Johnny B.
Yeah, so Johnny B. And next thing you know, I went to this, we had this art store on Broadway called Siltree. It wasn't like a serious art store, but, you know, they had a lot of the, you know, basic arts and crafts, supplies and stuff. That's where everybody, you know, when they did their sweatshirts and get their letters that they got ironed on their sweatshirt. Yeah. That's where we got them from. Yeah. So, Johnnybee. Ironing away. They had it in the shape of, like, you know, Superman's S.
Oh, that's dope.
Yeah. So, So that's what started that. And then that's when I started, people started hearing about it. Then I tried my hand, you know, when they had the music out. Mm-hmm. Everybody loved it. Started playing in Marcy Center. It's over with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but then when did you change it to Jazzo?
Oh, it was a long time after that. So this is what happened. Like, was still in elementary school, and I had a friend. Well, hopefully he's still my friend. You know. Just haven't talked to him in a long time.
Right.
William Foreman. We used to call him Winky. So Wink, you know, he used to always, you know, at one time he was like, yeah, man, I know, you know, you know where I live. Johnny B, that's what's going on. That's right. What it is. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yeah, we some badass kids. So I got to throw that in. But anyway... So it came a time when, you know, everybody had these super, you know, these big names. Because, you know, the bigger your name was, supposedly the bigger or more prominent you were. So, you know, you hearing people having names like Grandmaster.
Yeah, of course.
And all that stuff. And so I was like, yeah, let me get one like that. You know what I'm saying? Because Johnny B, it sound regular. My name getting out there and all that. Yeah. And it wasn't really like a marketing thing, because it was recreation. Right. Nobody was making money doing that, except, you know, later on I found out Uptown, you know, they would get paid, you know, to do shows, you know, like Cold Crushing them. And they were young and they were new then. Right. So basically what happened was I was just going through the dictionary and I saw this word Jazz Master. And of course, it had nothing to do with what, you know, the definition of, you know, to what I was doing. Because, you know, Jazz Masters, you know, God orchestrates and leads, you know, a jazz band. I was like, but it sounds good.
Yeah.
You know, saying like I'm the motherfucking man when motherfuckers say Jazz Master. And then, you know, I just come through, you know, with my Las Vegas robe and my big ass slippers and shit.
Tell them, man.
You know, so I stuck with that. And then, you know, I started saying it in my rhymes. So it was like marketing. You know, they was like, nah, he ain't Johnny B no more. He Jazz Master B, you know. And, you know, my man Wink, you know, we was in school. He just threw the Johnny shit out the window. He's like, yeah, that's my boy Jazz. Jazz. So he shortened it, you know, became Jazz. And, you know, I still kept Jazz Master B. But after a while, it became Jazz. And, man, so I went to later on, you know, we used to do like, this was the real mixtape. Like, it was actually a cassette tape. And, you know, I started doing stuff with other DJs, you know, but we were still all in the same circle. And so a couple of them got way down to Florida, and like Luke Skywalker heard of me, and I was like, word?
Wow.
You know, yeah. Wow. Yeah, they were getting around. And of course, as you know, it was no internet.
Yeah.
It was none of that going on. So, you know, that was a big accomplishment. So
was it before YouTube?
Yeah, before all of that.
Before MTV, before, man.
When the music still had a region.
Yeah.
Right. And then
the regional sound.
Yeah, and you would hear something. I mean, even to get that, you know, you talked about the nod you got just to know that it made it down to Florida, and that that Uncle Luke, you know, got a piece of it.
Exactly.
That's a big deal. That means it's traveling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you go from being a jazz master.
So
to jazz, and then what happens? You know, when did the whole originator start to come through?
Well,
because this is much later now. I mean, you were 13, 14. Originators came out. You know, we got the 5% Nation represented and all of that. Like, where'd all that come from, man?
What? Oh. Damn.
Take your drink.
You finish asking the question before I can take my sip.
Go ahead, take your sip. So when I was young, one of the things that and I was growing up in Southern California, and you know, it was a lot for it's always a big deal when somebody from your town like gets put on that does something and you start to feel represented in the music.
Right.
I was a huge hip hop head. You know, I'm getting all kinds of like dub tapes or whatever from friends at school, because my parents wouldn't. I mean, we didn't have money, so they just didn't buy it. Mm-hmm. and if they'd heard it, they wouldn't let me buy it anyway. And so that's what it was. And then one of the things that was just always crazy to me, I used to get like Fresh Magazine, and I get all these little magazines,
Rap
and
Masters.
I had the little Rap Masters and all of that. Right. And I had just pictures on the wall just surrounding me in my little room in LA. Mm-hmm. And I started seeing all these pictures of people with, like, you know, you see like the crescent and the star, and you see this, and then cats start talking about these things, and they're like the gods and the this and the that. And I'm like, I don't get it, but I feel it. Where is it? Like, what is all of that? How did that all come about for you?
This was later on when I was, you know, I was prominent, you know, streetwise, you know, as a lyricist. You know, I'm sure you've heard, you know, different people talking about, you know, they back then, they couldn't stand me because they were always talking about, well, I'm gonna put him out there, it was Kane.
Right, oh. Yeah, right.
Kane did an interview, and he was talking about how he was like, I couldn't stand, you know, some people took it negatively, but I didn't. Kane is a good friend. He's a good dude. And so he was like, I couldn't stand because every time I turn around, they keep talking about this dude, Jazz, yo, this dude, Jazz. And you know, Kane, you know, and you can tell, you know, by his skill set, of course, you know, he would be offended.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because he ain't no chump. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
Yeah.
And he was like, shit, this is Brooklyn. This is my town. You know, and he's supposed to feel that way.
It's competition. That's the other thing. This is a time in hip hop where it was always competitive. And you actually had to, like, come up through some type of proven ground. So your name actually had to be heavy in the streets.
Definitely.
You had to have a mixtape out. You get lucky, maybe Red Alert will play you on the radio or something like that. But like that, you had to actually play your role and come up. You had to be a good lyricist. Mm-hmm. You had to have stage presence. You had to get it all in. And so all of those things are coming together. You just mentioned some of the giants. I mean, it was Big Daddy Kane, it was Rakim, and it's Jazz.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like that's it. Like that's the Mount Rushmore at the time.
Yeah. So we, you know, I got a deal. Actually, just a FYI, like I got a deal with Tommy Boy.
Word.
Yeah, but it was a single deal, but it wasn't a hip hop. It wasn't for me to put out a hip hop song. I actually put out this R&B club song called "I'm in Love."
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Internet.
Great R&B. Internet.
And it's
there too. I was shocked that it is there. Like, man, internet and everybody's watching. So we followed up with that, and there's a producer who was very well known at that time. His name is Fresh Gordon, and we had done a lot of work together. I met him through one of my DJs, KG, David Gregory, and we started doing stuff together, and he was doing a lot of stuff with Tommy Boy, being that he had produced a couple of joints for the Fab Boys, for Divine Sound, and he actually produced, I'm gonna put it out there, well, it ain't no secret to some people, he actually did Push It.
Word.
For Salt and Pepper.
Yeah. Okay.
But he didn't.
He get the credit.
He didn't want the credit.
Okay.
That's the funny part. It wasn't like somebody stole it from him. Mm-hmm. He was offered credit, but we were so fucking hip hop back then. That for him to put his name on a song like that, he felt that it would mess up his credibility. So that shows where we were in our heads back then. It was really creative. It wasn't about bread. We weren't about the business as much back then. So he's like, and plus he was getting money. Yeah. So he's like, I ain't putting my name on that shit. You could just give me some money right now, and you could put your name however you want on it. You know, to Herbie.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so he had done those things. So he had a single deal with Tommy Boy as well. And he put out a song called Fresh Commandments. And he said he needed a B-side. So he asked me to do this song. Because, you know, my Adidas was on the radio heavy at that time. I Run DMC. Mm-hmm. And he was like, yo. But, you know, we don't rock those. You know, we Brooklyn, so we My Fila. So we did a song called My Fila, you know, like as an answer to the My Adidas. Mm-hmm. And it was a prominent New York song. Everything.
Yo, what's shaking, man? Yo, what's up, Fresh Jordan? Yo, man, you heard about the niggas from Queens? You mean? I mean, they can rap and everything, but you know what they wear on their feet? What they wearing, Jordan? Adidas. Word up, man. Because what I'm wearing on my feet, you got to buy two pair Adidas. They come in all colors and the girls love them. What you got on your feet, man? Man, My Fila.
And after that, I went to college for 2 years, and I came back home because I didn't really want to go to college. You know, I was hugging that street and, you know, things of that nature. So I started being managed by a gentleman named Jack Walker, who is the father of April Walker. I don't know if you ever heard of Walkerwear. Yeah, it was a prominent clothing brand. I think she brought it back too, but it was a prominent clothing brand. And I mean, everybody, Mike Tyson.
Everybody was rocking Walkerwear for a minute.
Yep.
Okay.
So so he was managing me, and he was like, man, he's like, let's put a record out. I was like, okay. So we went to, and Brooklyn people know what I'm talking about. They go back. We went to Ralston Studios on Fulton Street, and we recorded it, and we used the, you know, I was producing back then, so I just did a beat, and then did the bass line for Courageous Cat, and y'all probably like, what the hell? But, you know, Courageous Cat, and it went like, dun, 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 dun. It's the same one
that LL used for
I'm Bad.
Yeah, because me and him used to go back and forth, like, yo, every time I do something, here you come, you know. But we're going to that another time.
We could talk about
it's
that.
Queens, yeah, it's Queens.
Yeah, but it, right. But it was, nah, I ain't going to say that.
Wow. I'm just saying.
Wow.
I ain't
got them old borough wards?
I'm just saying. They're coming back? I'm just saying.
Bridges over.
I'm going to tell you. Nah, we was in Queens all the time.
So that Cool J stuff goes all the way back. It goes all the way back.
Yeah, but it was never anything, you know, violent or anything like that, or like what they call today, you know, these little rap beefs. It wasn't that serious. It was just like, it was competitive. But I mean, it didn't matter. That doesn't diminish his skill set by any means. You know what I'm saying? His skill set is there. So we did a song called HP Gets Busy, which was myself, Jay-Z, Almond Joy, and EZLD.
No further ado, this rap is you.
So how did that collab come together?
Just, you know,
people that you know, you just,
know,
come through.
Jazzo's a team player, man.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Team player. And I'm saying that to be joking, you know, talking about myself and, you know, second person. But nah, but serious, dude. I'm a team player. I always did that, and I always felt like, you know, we should do shit together, you know. But
yeah.
But yeah, so we put that song out, and then moving forward, I ran into, you know, being at Fresh Gordon's crib, I ran into a gentleman named Marlon Prescott, and he asked me, was I interested in, you know, getting a record deal. He knows some people, so on and so forth. So he introduced me to some managers, and they were saying that, yo, we can get you a deal quick, fast, in a hurry. You know, it was the quickest deal. They must have already had the deal on the table. They probably was like, yo, we got this money we need to wash or something, because
yeah, exactly.
That deal went down so quick. And so I did the deal with EMI, and, you know, the money was big. It was like the most money at that time for a long time that anybody ever received in the deals, to the sum of like $275,000. For my first album. And so
at the time, Jake, you're one of the biggest signers.
I was the biggest sign.
Wow.
The biggest sign. But it was so low key because, number one, no social media. Number two, you know I was on my street nigga savvy shit. You know as far as like, shit, I ain't telling anybody. I still live in Marcy. I ain't telling nobody I got that bread. And I wasn't worried, but it was just like, I didn't want the attention. So, I asked one of my DJs, I asked KG, I was like, yo, man, I'm going to London, what's up? You want to come? he didn't want to come. He's just like, yo, fuck with me when you get back. So I had to find a DJ. My management, they found a DJ for me. It ended up being Irv Gotti.
Fuck out of here.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And so, and you know, me and Jay, we were running.
Shout out to Irv Gotti.
Yeah, bro. Shout out to Irv. And Chris and their whole family.
That's word.
So it was myself, Irv, and Jay. Because, you know, me and Jay, we were running
together. When you say Jay?
Jay-Z. Mm-hmm. So we went to London to record in Battery Studios. One part of me was like, why the fuck are we going to London? The other part was like, y'all sure did give me a lot of money. Let's go.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I knew that I could still do whatever it is I needed to do as far as that was concerned. So we took that trip, had my first album out, made Hawaiian Sophie a single, which I didn't really want to do either because it didn't really express who I was creatively.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, you know.
The industry, man.
It was apropos for the time, though. Like, I think a lot of music was more...
Yeah, it was a novelty type song.
It was that time when, mm-hmm. you know, there was just music that was upbeat and happy.
Happier. Right.
I always felt like, this is just me calling it what it is. I always felt like Fresh Prince kind of stole your thunder with the some of the stuff that he did. It sounded very Hawaiian Sophie-ish to me.
Yeah, it did. It did.
Let's just call that.
It did.
And you know. I fucked with Will Smith and Fresh Prince. I had the albums, but I just mm-hmm. know...
I mean, they know what it is.
Yeah, what he was doing early didn't sound like that.
Right, right. And I mean, rightfully so. Like, and then I had like Slick Rick.
Mm.
He was in they were in a group. It was him, another guy, and Dana Dane. And they were called the Kango Crew.
Yep.
And it was like, I don't know, Rick, if you hear this, man, I don't know what kind of problem you got with me, man. You know. But, it wasn't that serious, but, you know, like, again, it was a competitive thing because, I used to come uptown and do my one twos, you know, yeah. And it was the same thing. Like, the fuck is this dude Jazz? Like, why is he up here? Ain't this nigga from Brooklyn? What he doing up here? Why do people like him up here? You know what I'm saying? But
yeah.
It was one of those things. But anyway,
so
we good did, music is good music.
Yeah, but we ain't give a fuck about that. We right. were just trying to be the best. It's like, who the fuck are you? It wasn't violent. That right. was the thing. It wasn't violent. It's just like, who the fuck are you? Like, every time I used to see him, he just had his look and be like, like, damn, B. You know what I'm saying? You know.
This shit is crazy competitive because everybody was on at the time. Like, the rest of the world is being completely transformed listening to everybody's shit.
Right.
Yeah. And y'all going at it in the neighborhoods.
Yeah, I was like Dave Chappelle. Like, you know, black actors, man. Black actors. You know what I'm saying? This thing is like, fuck this thing. But,
stick together.
You know what I'm saying? Because I used to come up there and win rap contests. I used to have.
Oh yeah, that would piss everybody off.
Yeah, dude. We used to be up at the club called Broadway International. So win all those, and then the rooftop, Broadway International. The finalist was Just Ice.
Oh yeah,
and he had some guy with him called, I don't know, Tricky T. He got rid of him, like, in the finals. He was like, man, you ran out of rhymes, all that other shit. You know. But anyway, we were the finalists. It was us. Then another time, it was Dana Dane. And
you talk about legends, though, yeah. man. Like, we talking about legends yeah. of the game. Dana Dane, Cinderfella, like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We all know Slick Rick is yeah. in the back when he was with Ricky D.
Yeah. Yeah. Shout out
to Ricky D.
Shout out to yeah. both of y'all.
Absolutely. And,
shout out to Just Ice, too.
So you've touched most a definitely. Lot of, you've touched a lot of different, you know, people in your career. So can you, like, run through some of your...
Then, well, you mentioned the Jay guy.
Well, there's that Jay guy.
Right.
Whoever that might be.
Who he took to London.
to record that first record.
Name? What's his name?
What's
again?
His name? Jay who?
Right.
I don't know
who Jay is. I mean, production wise, I mean, everybody in that era, like it was, you know, though it was competitive with the lyricist circle. You know, because everybody wasn't lyrical. You know, some people, they just, you know, I made a record. You know, I got a deal. You know, nobody really, you know, the ones who knew, they knew. It was like, nah, nobody really respects my, you know, my spit game, you know. But I do have a record out, and I am on the radio, and I did get money. You know what I'm saying? And
right.
I respect that. You know, but there was a different circle, like, cast that, yo, you know, this dude got it. You know, I don't wanna go at him like that, or, you know, not me, but I ain't kidding. I'm the best ever.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And anybody who didn't think that or doesn't think that, they shouldn't even be doing it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's just how I feel. So I won some battles and stuff. But
biggest battle you won from somebody somebody that we would know?
That was,
I mean, you've already mentioned Dana Dane and some of the others. I mean, that's crazy.
That was the most competitive. There was a time.
You mentioned LL early on.
Yeah. LL was. I felt bad because he was just minding his business. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Him and his boy, they were just minding their business. We were leaving a party. I think it was at the Ritz in New York. It was an industry party. I forgot who it was for. But so we were standing outside, you know, like Brooklyn niggas do.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Waiting.
Right.
You ambushing him because you know he's coming.
Right.
You outside. Practiced. Y'all ready to go.
You know what I mean? But we weren't even thinking about him like that. Like it wasn't even a situation like that. And you know, there was no conflict or anything like that. But we were standing outside, you know, and him and his boy, I forgot who was with him, but you know, they were walking by, and Sauce Money was with us, and Sauce was just the type to always start some rap shit. He was like, I'm better than that nigga. Yo, battle this nigga right now. And you know, I'm just saying, I ain't saying nothing, you know. And Jay's standing there, and like a couple of other people, and then it just so happened that our boy Dre, he had, remember the big ass cameras with the VHS?
Yeah.
Yep.
The big VHS camera. It's like lifting weights. And he started filming. And Saul said something. And then whoever that was with LL, he was like, yo, you just can't walk away, man. Niggas gonna talk about that shit. Plus, this nigga's rolling film on you. You know what I'm saying? So it'll definitely be a bad look.
It's New York shit.
You know what I'm saying? So LL turned around. LL started rhyming. And I like LL's skill set, but I ain't know what the fuck he was talking about that time. You know, I ain't know what he was talking about. But the funny part about it, I was the only nigga that he really knew existed. So Sauce was talking all this shit to him, but he was rhyming at me.
Right.
And I'm like, I ain't even seen nothing to you, homie. You know what I'm saying?
Even in this battle.
Yeah. It's like, yo, I saw you early. I said, what's up? You said, what's up? It's like, yo, that was the end of it. This nigga rhyming at me. I'm like, wow. It's like, well, that let me know one thing. It's like, I'm on your mind.
That's right.
Yeah.
So
did you battle?
I turned it loose on him. And everybody's breaking their neck to find that VHS tape.
Where is it?
Who knows?
That shit's gone.
But you know what I'm saying? Deteriorated if nothing else, right?
That shit is gone.
Just
so you crushed it.
I don't know, but I know everybody was impressed with what I said.
I want to know.
Yeah. I like how you see you the best ever, but then you back off of it when we say it's like so you killed it. Well, I mean, you know,
because I'm over it. Yeah, I'm over it. Like
I did. Well, I do.
But that's the thing though. Like That's the thing. That's why I love this right here, checking your egos, because regardless of what you do, you know, it doesn't define who I am, as far as, like, you know, like a lot of people say, like, when I first met you, or when I was, you know, somebody was talking about you and then they said this or that, and they were like, yeah, this nigga probably some more arrogant. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And they would think that because so many people, and it's rightfully so, because so many people who have success, or, you know, they're talented or known for certain things, you know, a lot of them are assholes. Mm-hmm. Or they treat people like assholes because they feel they can. Mm-hmm. You know, and, but I'm, for me, those, they're two different entities. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm talking about what I do and who I am as far as the game is concerned, but that's not who I am.
It's not who you are as a person.
Right. As a person, like, I'm not a nigga that's waiting for you to slip up so I could, you know, talk some evil shit about you. Mm-hmm. Or you know, but yeah, like, I'm over it. And to be honest with you, you know, let me put it out there, like, I feel like my skill set is above and beyond anything I've ever heard. So I'm like, fuck it. Why trip over it?
Yeah.
And if other people want to trip, that's fine. But I'm not tripping. Mm. And I'm not saying it to say, like, oh, I'm the greatest. But I am.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck it. Why not?
Problems. Your motherfuckers don't know me. 1985, me, Trey Pound 7 holding, nickel plated, 2-2 stashing. If I flash, I'm blasting. Marcy Gab walking, swing, house medallion with the link chain, posting up. I was a grown nigga growing up. You got a problem, nigga, throw em up. We used to tussle, can't cut you, fo-fo it up. Even surround away enemies was close enough, a little too close. All of a sudden, not showing up. I kicked them verses in parks till them guns burst in the dark. From dog to bite, worse than they bark. Diplomatic with them cats, then dispersed from the park. Who knew? Who's next? Slugs burst in they heart. Families hurt to they heart. Herbs not playing they part. Get murdered. Killers displaying they heart. No name calling. No name repeating. No names running they mouth. No name.
But I'm listening.
But seriously, like,
complexity of being human, bro.
Yeah, I don't trip. Like, I'm over it. I just say, like, yo, I'm thankful. You know what I'm saying? To be able to express myself in a way that pleases me and that pleases other people. And it gives me a joy to know that I can give people, I don't know exactly how people feel, but I can give them a semblance of how it makes me feel to express it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So in that, I don't need the ego trip. You know what I'm saying? I'm good. Like, that's a joy to have, like, even with beats, like, to have a, something in your head. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's how I make beats. Like, I hear it in my head, even if it's a sample. Like, I mm-hmm. hear it in my head how I'm gonna chop it first, and then I execute. So mm-hmm. to actually hear made what I had in my head is an extreme joy. Yeah. And it's the same thing with lyrical content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's creativity and creation. I think we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and hear the rest of your story.
Okay.
What's up, Slay?
I need you to make a hit for me.
Talk to me.
Four suspects.
Who?
Busta Rhymes. Lazy Bone.
Wells.
Twista. Dazzo.
I got you.
There they go. Take the shot. Take the shot. Damn!
What can it be? Rappers are thugging on beasts. None of them keep in the street. Look at them cows. All of them wanna be bulls. None of them ready for beef. What about me? Been through the pain. Sorted the lames. Keep it the same. Skillful syllables kill. My rhyming technique is impeccable still. Anybody ever wanna run up with your gun up in a hurry? Got a flurry. I'm a hunter for the come up with a banger. Better learn up for the runner. Till you're permanent. Spit it out. We'll live it. Idiots getting it. The originator. Gotta keep it great. Keep it faded for the haters. Nigga real for real. The all time thriller. Ready rocker. The definite. On in the cooking. The chefing it. Ooh. Taking over the world. I'm making off with your girl. Motherfucker recognize the nigga who having it. Doing what you never did. The devil time. Triple time. President. Ain't nobody better in the residence. Scream the crap. See me stop. Over the top. Bringing the soul, making it pop. Got an old school banger, making do the wop. Got a Louisville slugger, making diddy bop. Never incredible, gotta keep away ahead of you. Streaming them niggas in the clink, doing federal. No trip, no travesty. I caught a lick, now I'm up like anti-gravity. Spit words from the brain like charity. If hip hop was a bar, she'd marry me. Gotta keep it gutter, gotta get the bread, gotta get the butter, make it hot. You can toast, work them up.
Just let through to spit some real thug.
All right, we're back. We're winging it the podcast.
Oh, you bringing back my stuff.
I am. We're back.
So I read something, obviously, recently, and you posted it on your social media.
There's a new Roc Nation deal, and that's kind of a big deal. We could talk about that, right? We could talk
yeah,
about that.
Definitely.
Look, okay, all right. Yeah.
But let's make it plain and clear. Though it is, you know, in essence, a Roc Nation situation. The way the deal is structured, my company, which is Kings County Media Group,
right,
has a distribution situation with Equity Distro. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a new company under the Roc Nation umbrella. Mm-hmm. And, you see the way it's worded in, in the news feeds and stuff like that. And it's accurate.
Yeah.
You know, but, you guys asked, I specify, and that's basically the deal, you know.
So I'm going to talk about that just a little bit because I think that's a very respectable deal. And, you know, there's the history is well documented, although it may not be very accurate and factual. But there was a time when, Jay is rocking with Dame. Things are coming together. There's a deal put on the table. And now that you told this other part of the story, it brings this up. Like, you had actually already been signed by EMI the first time around before you take Jay on a trip around the world, to London in particular, at $270,000, which is the highest signing of all time. Come mm-hmm. back, there's a deal put on the table. I don't remember the number. I think it was like $200,000 or $100,000 or something like that to sign with Rockefeller. Mm-hmm. And that didn't go down. There's a whole bunch of stuff that people have said about it.
Of course.
But I want to hear, outside of all the rap battles, and there were some good ones that happened in the middle of that, just call that. But outside of all of that, how did you feel? And like, how has it felt? Because I feel like there's been a sort of an unraveling, some chaos, and then grown men coming back together and just being real about some shit recently and squashing some stuff. And so, what happened?
Yeah.
Well, for the most part, I would like to say that hindsight, looking at everything, that I don't feel like, in business, somebody may say like, oh, I've been wronged or this, that, and the other. But at the end of the day, and I know it sounds very politically correct, and I don't care, this is how I really feel about it.
Yeah.
Is that the way things happen, I was given options. I didn't think the options were for me, so I turned it down. Mm-hmm. For the experience and knowledge I had in business,
yeah.
I felt that, it wasn't for me. I felt that I would jerk myself by taking that type of deal, And yeah, true.
So it wasn't just the money. It was all aspects of the deal.
Yeah. It was, other things involved in the deal that I wasn't too cool with, so I just said, nah, that's all right. And I don't know how anybody took it, but I know how I took the whole aspect of being presented something in a certain way. And, it's just business.
How did you take it?
It was business.
Because you talked about respect, yeah. You talked family.
Yeah.
And then you said it. Like, I'm just going to cut into it. You said, I've always been a team player.
Right.
Yeah. So,
and you've also sort of thematically told us how much, the concept of respect is, how much it means to you. So, like, in the middle of that moment, did you feel disrespected?
A little bit. But I didn't blame anybody for anything.
Yeah.
I just felt like, just like with anything, mm-hmm. if you feel you deserve more, then you go for more.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you go at a certain thing and do things a certain way, you can't blame somebody else, Nobody put a gun to my head to say, oh, do this and do that. You make a decision and you got to live with it and you got to own it. So, in saying that.
Did you ever regret it?
No.
At no point?
No, I don't regret. I don't regret stuff I do.
Good shit.
I mean, it'd be a lot of, you hear it. A lot of people retract statements and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know. they should take one out of Homeboy's playbook. You know, you don't hear him say much.
Yeah.
So when he says something, it's like, that's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't really hear him retract statements. You don't hear me retract statements.
Yeah. That's that.
Yeah.
I appreciate you talking about that.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So what's new?
Fuck up my deal.
I'm not trying to fuck your deal up.
No,
I'm trying to have some.
We're just trying.
We said authentic.
Yeah, we
said we're gonna keep it real. Find out, motherfucker. I knock your fronts out, chug crow till I bug out. Cannon a hit, banana clip, peel a slug out. Nigga, no doubt, you looking up, I pull the rug out. Play as you can, I win the pennant from the dugout. Think you a hit? With y'all that bad, I put your shut out. Screaming what out? I smack the blood out. Might be made from paper, but for this you ain't cut out. Ass niggas butt out, glass niggas break it up. Fake niggas make it up, I floats for the flood out. I mac for the gut out, bitches put out, get the fuck in, get the fuck out. Give her three orgasms and nut out. In 83, I put the blunt out. Never run out. I'm helping son out.
So you're clearly back out there. Yep. There's new music out there. Yep. What do you want to tell people about what you got going on right now?
Yeah.
I got what I call a buzz single called K County Drummer. K County, of course, means Kings County. Yeah.
And blocker.
You know, it's one of those we do this hip hop shit over here. Mm. Type of songs, you know, and it's
some boom bap.
Not so much boom bap, but it's reminiscent of, you know, it's reminiscent of being in a club, you know, and that super dance joint comes on and everybody, if you ain't bopping your head, you dancing. Mm-hmm. You know, but it doesn't sound, I think it has like a timeless feel to it. That's if cool. I may say so myself.
And what's the mm-hmm. what's just quickly, your social, how do people find you on social?
IG, Jazzo KKMG, which is Jazo KKMG. That's for Kings County Media Group. Also, you can go to the website, which is KingsCountyMediaGroup.com, which is KingsCountyMediaGroup.com.
My man still got, he's still spelling and giving y'all the grammar because it's what his mama taught him from the very beginning.
That's right.
That's right.
He ain't mess right. with y'all at all.
Yeah. Spell this
I
shit
get a
right.
phone call and shit.
All right. Mm-hmm. I got another, like, maybe kind of off the wall question. What's the greatest collaboration? Are you allowed
you
to say?
You mean song wise?
Yeah, your greatest collaboration.
Shit.
Your favorite.
My favorite?
Yeah.
Man. It's gotta be Nigga What, Nigga Who.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I like Originators, but I really, really fuck with Nigga What, Nigga Who.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna tell you why.
Ever heard of me? But the nigga's like a third degree. Man, I love that shit, man.
Checks in the mail.
Come on, man. I got you. Appreciate it.
But, I really, it's the backstory behind that.
Uh-huh.
I'm not gonna reveal too much, but I am starting a set of volumes of short books, and it's gonna be called Universes.
Okay.
And it's really just gonna be like the telltale of some of my landmark verses. And I'm starting with that one.
That's gonna be dope.
So, and you not revealing a lot with that right there? Do I gotta cut that? You tell me I gotta cut that? Universes.
It's fine.
Single verses.
It's just the.
I like it.
It's just the beginning. Like it's really like a I do basically a bio for people who may not be familiar with me and my work, and then go into a foreword of why I'm doing it, and I go into the explanation of some, you know, the events leading up to me going into the studio, doing it, you know, because there's special circumstances for that verse in particular. It's not just the notoriety of that verse in that song. So there were a lot of things involved, certain people involved that is very you know, the story is very captivating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I feel. And so not only that, but it is a sort of a lesson in poetic license. Mm-hmm. As far mm-hmm. as I make note of the, you know, of certain, you know, the most popular mm-hmm. uses of poetic license in, you know, in lyrics. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I explain like the definition of onomatopoeia, mm-hmm. simile, mm-hmm. metaphor, entendre, mm-hmm. you know, and then I lay out the verse. Mm-hmm. And if something pertains, mm-hmm. then I'll, you know, I'll
expand upon it.
Yeah.
That's going to be dope. Crazy.
So I'm working on that for the most part, and my own, I don't know, just how I feel about writing. I'm writing it myself. I don't have like a, you know,
you don't have a ghostwriter.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm not, you know, nobody's taking dictation and all that bullshit. It's like, yo, I know how to, you know what I'm saying? Mm. I know how to write. And I'm not saying write as far as put words together. I know how to write.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, sentence structure, everything mm-hmm. else. And to formulate and
yeah.
keywords, you know, how to captivate, mm-hmm. you know, the reader and so on and so forth. So, you know, fuck, I'm using somebody else.
So you on?
I like it.
I think there's something special about what you're talking about, yeah, too, though, in that even in explaining what it is that you're doing, why you're doing it, and then how you're putting it together, you're talking about the value of studying and being all the way skilled. Mm-hmm. Is critical to even being able to express yourself fully.
Right.
Right. Like the depth of the expression that you've always been able to get out has a lot to do with the fact that you're very familiar with the dictionary
mm-hmm.
And have always been challenged in terms of how do you express what you say? This is proper syntax structure, all of those things mm-hmm. that makes you more capable of expressing yourself at levels that people can't even, you said triple entendre,
yeah.
right? Mm-hmm. Like that's even first of all, to know what it is. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And then to be able to say, you know what, I'm about to give somebody triple entendre. This shit is sick mm-hmm. to right. the extent that you delivered the rhyme and, you know, people just kind of catch it and they're bobbing their head and they don't even know what else is happening to them.
Right.
Subconsciously, mm-hmm. given all the things that you put into it. And that's a deep appreciation of the mm-hmm. skills yeah, that go
yeah.
into it.
Yeah. Yeah. Challenge yourself. Cause yeah.
I think what it does, it helps. So I think that like rap music is a really sort of authentic expression of the experiences of, you know, people of color in this country, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I like the way that you're explaining this, the way that you're sort of putting, you know, language behind the method, I think is going to be really valuable for people because everyone listens to music, but to have context, to have, you know, to understand that it isn't just, you know, coming up with words off the top of your head. It's in the flow. It's in, mm-hmm. you know, it's in all of these different parts of how you're structuring it to be appealing, captivating, tell a good story. And, you know, to be able to articulate that in a book, I think would be just amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really dope project.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
So there's two sides to our ego coins. Normally we have ego written on both sides. I got one last question. The big side, like the one side is the ego, is the one we all know, the arrogance, to being all the way out there, seeing yourself as bigger than, you know, reality to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other side of the ego coin is what we like to say is the little voice in your head
mm-hmm.
that causes you to play small.
Mm-hmm.
Were there ever periods where you played small?
Every day.
Interesting.
But, you know, I mean, I want to fully understand if you can elaborate.
Yeah, so when we say play small, we mean like there's the depth of expression inside of you, something that you know you should get out, mm-hmm. but you don't feel as confident or as capable, or people are not going to really understand or feel this, or I don't deserve it. I feel like that's also the ego sort of telling us to hold back.
Right.
People don't, they're not going to like it or anything like that. Do you ever play small as well?
It depends, because that's a really good question, because sometimes you have to look at the big picture. Like if there's a certain song and you know where it's going when it goes out into the world, you know, you say like, oh, no, nah, I can't do that, you know, because this is this. And, you know, so you do hold back. But my challenge is to find ways to simplify it so much that even if it's at the, I'm not saying like I'm the super brain of the universe, but I'm just saying like, you know, where it's at the peak of people's understanding, you know, where I could, and yeah, as far as like, I have to say it, you know, dumbing some things down.
Yeah.
You know, because everybody, number one, they don't know your head. Number two, even if they did, some can put the pieces together, some can't. It's right. just a reality, you know. And it's not so much an intellect thing, because somebody else could say something and like I can't put my head into what they're saying. I mean, that's rare. I probably can, but, you know, I'm just saying, I'm trying to be fair and shit. Right. So that's a perfect example of what you're asking me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, all right, fuck it. I know what you're saying, but you don't know what I'm saying.
Right.
It's messed up, right? It's the truth.
That's life. It's true. So one thing I look forward to, as you get into this next chapter and we get the book series and all of that, all right, so thank you so much.
Thank you, man.
Thank you so much for coming on this show and spending this time with us.
Yeah, thanks for telling us like all these stories. It's really dope to hear your life, you know?
I literally have millions of them.
All right, so Athena, this is your part.
Oh, yeah.
Top sheet.
Right. Follow us on social media, on Instagram at Winging It the Podcast, and on Twitter at the podcast Winging It. And I cannot see the Facebook thing, so...
And Facebook is just find it. Is that the podcast Winging It on Facebook as well? Fantastic. I should probably know that. I don't. All right. Is there anybody else or anything else you want to shout out before we get off?
I don't want to go into a million names, but I definitely want to shout out the whole Kings County Media Group staff.
Yep.
All of the Equity Distro staff and Rock Nation staff. All my family and friends everywhere. You know, I love y'all. I don't like to do individual names too much because you forget one name and you start getting that phone call and you're like, yo, I just forgot. I mean, I don't love you. I just fucking forgot.
Mm. You know, right, people remember the things that matter to them. That's when you hear that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Yeah, right. That's true. Well, so, and then just our team.
We like to shout out our whole team. We got, well, I'll start with you, Athena. Thank you. Good job. You're doing great.
Thanks. You too.
Shout out to Ronice Henneman, Nicole Harden, Emil Bryant, Brianna Perez Crutchfield, and Trinity Elder, and Dwayne Jones for getting us all the great visuals. That's it. Winging It, the podcast for people who do not have their shit together.
The original deity, indivisible, primitive is criminal, all in the physical. Currently, currency bagging it with the urgency and with the word game, still nice like courtesy. Spend a minute, time is money, make it well worth your wait. Spend a minute, amidst all the hoopla and melee, and the OG call to my nigga K Slate. I hereby solemnly swear to take it where. Got some brave motherfuckers if you follow me there. First off, A&R's obsolete, we got this cocksucker, let it pop in the street. Make a banger that's a guarantee, hardest hitter. Keep a buzz like a shop full of barber clippers. Got my mind and my clothes like sharper scissors. And a car to turn heads while they call the whippers. And the coolie, yours truly got a cool with sharp shooties that'll make it totally impossible to hit us. Work to the immortal DJ Stevie Steve. I've been killing the drummer's beat since Marcy Center. Backbiters can't bother with ya or even waste time throwing darts at the closet. But all violent about the size of the two Dakotas. And cop diamonds to my wrist go supernova. Sweet and the Nico full of my people. Naked bitches hard liquor, this week's the sequel, man. The sum of it all, there will be no equal.